Allstate wants to remind fans that mayhem is everywhere, like at your pregame barbecue. While you prep your meats, that grease trap you forgot to empty is prepping to smoke your porch, garage, and the car inside. And without the right home and auto insurance coverage, the cost to repair this could eat up your savings. So bundle home and auto with Allstate to save and get protected from mayhem like this. Bundled savings vary and are not available in every state. Coverage is subject to policy terms and conditions.
We are welcoming a new show to iHeart and the DraftKings YouTube channel. It is called Point Game with John Wall and CJ Toledano. It's an insider's look at the NBA and the culture surrounding the league. Every week, the five-time All-Star and the number one pick in the 2010 NBA Draft, John Wall, will give his unique perspective on the hottest topics in the league and tell the best behind-the-scenes stories from his time in the NBA. So check out Point Game with John Wall and CJ Toledano on the iHeartRadio app, the DraftKings YouTube channel, or wherever you listen to your podcasts. Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 U.S.-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yeah, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service anytime. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/credit card.
The Volume.
The thrill and excitement of March Mania is here, and DraftKings Sportsbook, one of America's top-rated sportsbook apps, is giving new customers a shot to turn $5 into $150 instantly in bonus bets with any college basketball bet. You could bet on absolutely anything. If you want to bet on UConn or North Carolina, fans can get in on this year to bet them to win the title, all the way down to teams like Stetson and Longwood to win the title. You can even bet individual seeds to win the title. You can bet anything on DraftKings for the tournament. Download the DraftKings Sportsbook app and use code HOOPS. New customers can bet $5 to get $150 instantly in bonus bets only at DraftKings Sportsbook with code HOOPS. That's H-O-O-P-S. The crown is yours. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER, or in West Virginia, visit www.1800gambler.net. In New York, call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY to 467-369. In Connecticut, help is available for problem gambling. Call 888-789-7777 or visit ccpg.org. Please play responsibly on behalf of Boot Hill Casino and Resort in Kansas. 21 plus, age varies by jurisdiction. Void in Ontario. Bonus bets expire 168 hours after issuance. See dkng.com/bball for eligibility and deposit restrictions, terms, and responsible gaming resources. All right, welcome to Hoops Tonight here at The Volume. Happy Thursday, everybody. Hope all of you guys are having an incredible week. It is good to be back. Had an awesome final ski trip of the year down in the South Lake Tahoe area. Skied heavenly for the first time ever. Unbelievable view going up that gondola out of that little strip by where the casinos are. You get to see the entirety of the lake and unbelievable conditions we had. They got a bunch of fresh powder right before we showed up and just got to have a good little kickback, one last little bit of fun before we get into the grind of the postseason. Bear with me a little bit today. I was up at 2 a.m. navigating a blizzard through the pass there as we headed back into Reno and connecting flights in Salt Lake and all that good stuff. And we're finally back home, a little bit brain fried, but I wanted to get some stuff out there from the incredible week of hoops we had while I was gone. So what we're going to do, the plan for right now, obviously, as we go into the weekend, there's a kind of a funky NBA schedule because of the NCAA tournament. So what we're going to do today is I'm going to go over my four biggest takeaways from my time on vacation. X's and O's in the Phoenix-Denver game from last night, a little bit more surface level stuff with some other stuff around the league, because obviously I wasn't watching as closely while I was out of town. So we're just going to do a quick touch on all those things around the league. Then we're going to take the rest of the weekend off, and then starting Monday, grind time, power rankings. We're going to start doing film sessions more regularly. Going to start building out our playoff previews from there too. Should be a lot of fun. I'm really excited. You guys know the drill. Before we get started, subscribe to our brand new YouTube channel. It'll mean a lot to me if you guys take a second to scroll down, hit that subscribe button. Don't forget about our podcast feed, wherever you get your podcasts, under Hoops Tonight. It's also super helpful if you leave a rating and a review on that front. Don't forget about my Twitter feed at _JasonLT, where I leave film threads from time to time, as well as show announcements. And the last but not least, keep dropping mailbag questions in the YouTube comments so we can start hitting them throughout the week next week. All right, let's talk some basketball. So my first big takeaway from my time out of town last week, I guess the last time we recorded a show was with the Nerd Sesh guys last week on Friday. So it's been about a week. Number one, Phoenix is not better than Denver, but they are the biggest threat to knock off Denver in the Western Conference. I thought, even though it's not just because of last night's game. I don't think last night's game was some sort of big sweeping declaration. I saw there's a Suns guy that I follow that tweeted something along the lines of like, oh man, we got to start rethinking the MVP race now. I'm like, hold on, everyone just chill out for just a second. Like it's a really weird game, obviously, with Jamal Murray being out and with Yusuf Nurkic being out. It just fundamentally alters the entire dynamic of this particular matchup. But I do think that there are some things specifically in that matchup that caused Denver some issues, which we're going to talk about, which is what I think does translate to that postseason setting and what I think makes them the biggest threat. Obviously, Nurkic is just an important element of this matchup because he's one of the few guys in the league that can kind of sort of hang physically with Jokic, which gives Phoenix some more flexibility to defend actions two-on-two and one-on-one, especially with Jokic post-ups, which can help them stay out of rotation. And then obviously when you take Murray out of the equation, it's just a huge drop off in terms of that second tier shot creation. Like, we know Michael Porter Jr. can scale up his offense. And honestly, he's been one of the stories of the last couple of the months for Denver, just how good Michael Porter Jr. has been offensively, even on nights when Jamal Murray's not available. But obviously he's more consistent as a third scoring option than he is as a second scoring option. And when you slot him up into that spot, and there can be a little bit more inconsistency, he had a little bit of an off night, right? Going from Jamal Murray as your main kind of two-man game option with Jokic and Reggie Jackson being your backup guard to suddenly Reggie Jackson being your main two-man game partner and then having Colin Gillespie out there getting minutes as that backup point guard, that's just a big drop-off. And both of those guys, Reggie Jackson and Colin Gillespie, both had really tough nights on the ball. And again, like that two-man game, what does that expression mean, two-man game? What that means is you're running these actions with these two players, a bunch of different ways to do it, right? You can invert it. You can run on different spots of the floor. You can run it out of the post. You can run it out of ball screens, triple handoffs, whatever you call it. It's any sort of like two-man action, right? In that two-man game, what makes it a two-man game is that both guys are a threat. And specifically the Murray-Jokic two-man game, the threat there is like you switch a slower-footed guy onto Jamal Murray, he can beat him with tough ISO over-the-top shot making. Same thing with Nikola Jokic. If you switch a smaller player on him, he can take him down to the post, score in the post, or draw double teams in the post. If you run drop coverage, Jamal Murray has all the drop beating shots in the book, right? Like there's a two-pronged approach there. And on the right night, you know, you can run more DHOs with Michael Porter Jr. and he's got it going and it works. On the right night, Reggie Jackson can be a reasonable facsimile of Jamal Murray, but obviously there's a drop off there. And so honestly, between Nurkic being out and Jamal Murray being out, there's a lot of this game that doesn't look very similar to what an actual playoff series between these two teams would look like. But what does translate? The biggest one to me, that by far the biggest thing that stood out to me on tape watching this game, and obviously it was something that we noticed in their matchup a month ago, but it was kind of glaring in this game as well, is Phoenix can keep Denver in rotation on defense. Now, what does that mean to be in rotation? What that means is like there is an open man and the other elements of your defense are operating in a man down situation and they're having to leave their man to go to the next guy in line and vice versa. So essentially, just to draw it out in a very simple, basic way, let's pretend Kevin Durant's posting up on the right block and he draws a double from the face side, from the elbow, right? And let's say that they rotate around in a windshield wiper rotation. They take away that first pass of the wing. They're matched up on the top, so the skip pass is open. Once that skip pass is made, no one's actually matched up there, right? There's two guys on KD. There's a guy guarding the guy at the top of the key, guy guarding the guy in the opposite wing and maybe in the opposite dunker spot or in the opposite kind of like between the wing and the corner, depending on how they have the floor set up, right? But that corner guy, the weak side corner guy, he doesn't have a matchup. So as soon as that pass is made, somebody else has to rotate there, which means the next guy has to rotate to his man, which means the next guy has to rotate to his man, and so on and so forth. To put it in a very simple term, to be in rotation is to not be matched up defensively, which can cause all sorts of problems, not just with being in constant closeout situations where you're inevitably just chasing the next guy off the three-point line. But then he makes a nice driving kick read. Now you're chasing the next guy off the three-point line. In addition to that, it also hurts you in rebounding situations. When you are in rotation, you are not matched up. If you're not matched up, you don't know who to box out. If you don't know who to box out, there's probably going to be one or two guys having a free run at the basket. For instance, Phoenix has been a good offensive rebounding team all season. Why? Because they frequently draw second defenders and third defenders in ball screens and ISOs and post-ups. And because of that, they have the defense in rotation consistently. And so there's usually a son somewhere on the floor that is going to get a free run to the offensive glass. And they can have a lot of success that way. But like there was three ways in particular. I want to dive into the specific kind of X's and O's stuff. There are three ways that Phoenix was keeping Denver in rotation in this game. One was bringing Jokic up to the level of the screen. Phoenix has really high level pull-up shooters. And when they pull, again, it's a very simple push and pull, right? We talk about this push and pull all the time on the show. You have your on-ball guy. You have your screen defender. If the screen defender has to come out high and the roller can get behind him, now you have to tag the roller, which puts you in rotation because now you essentially have two on the ball and you're bringing a guy over to guard the roll man. There's somebody open on the weak side. As long as that ball gets worked around, you're going to be in rotation defensively, right? If the big guy can drop back and stay with the roller in front of him, then you don't have to tag the roller, and that allows you to stay home elsewhere and allows you to stay matched up and be out of rotation. Right. The problem is there is by leaving Jokic further back, there's room there in the middle of the floor to operate. And those are really good players. And Devin Booker and Kevin Durant and Bradley Beal that you're allowing to operate in that middle area of the floor. Right. So like Phoenix being a team that has the type of talent that will pull Jokic out to the level of the screen is an important part of what allows them to keep Denver in rotation defensively. Now, we're going to talk about it in a minute because there's a case to be made that Denver probably shouldn't bring Jokic up to the level, but we'll get there, right? Secondly, nail help and ISO doubles. I thought Reggie Jackson was the main culprit here. A lot of like guarding a guy on the wing and, you know, one of the Phoenix ball handlers makes a drive towards the middle. Imagine Phoenix ball handler in the right wing, Reggie Jackson guarding the guy on the left wing, okay? And Devin Booker, let's say, rips through to the left and kind of gets towards the middle. Reggie Jackson is sinking way down into the lane and leaving his guy open on the on that wing. And so from there, it's just a simple swing pass, and now it's in rotation. And this is not in rotation against a team that has lower-level offensive talent that you can kind of offer a token contest at or a token closeout out and kind of chase them off the line. Phoenix just has lasers all over the floor, right? And so when you're in rotation against them, you can be in a big issue where whoever you leave open is a big-time threat to knock that shot down, right? But yeah, Reggie Jackson sinking too far down into the nail and then also like kind of randomly double-teaming without much purpose. He was getting out of position a lot. They were getting into rotation off that. And then lastly, the offensive glass. Like I mentioned earlier, Phoenix is a good offensive rebounding team because they get you in rotation a lot. But also, Denver, do you guys remember the offensive glass was an issue the last time Phoenix came to town? Matter of fact, if you've been watching the Nuggets closely, it's been an issue for a little while. Denver is 27th. And defensive rebounding percentage since the All-Star break. Now, the starters have been fine. They're about 75% defensive rebounding percentage, which is good. Not great, but it's good, right? That's fine. But basically, every other configuration of every other type of lineup that Denver's putting out there right now, they're struggling to rebound. And that's been a consistent issue. Now, why am I harping so much on rotation? It is just really, it's a lot easier to get quality shots playing driving kick basketball against a defense that is in rotation than it is to get quality shots in one-on-one and two-on-two situations against good individual defenders, right? So for instance, what is the advantage? Why do we sit, like, I still think Denver is the team that I would pick in a matchup between these two teams in a postseason series, right? Most people I think would agree with me. Why? Because we believe Denver gets better shots, right? That's the whole thing with Denver. If I take Denver, I'm taking the team that most likely is going to get better shots throughout the course of a seven-game series. And if it's a lot of Kevin Durant, Devin Booker pull-up jump shots like it was last year, then yeah, Denver's going to get much better shots. And on the games when Phoenix makes all their pull-up jumpers, they're going to win. But if Phoenix is existing in rotation, I should say keeping Denver in rotation, and getting really good drive and kick looks for really good offensive players, all of a sudden, Phoenix's shot quality goes like this. And this is not the same team that Phoenix was last year. There's a lot more offensive firepower on this Phoenix Suns team. And so that's the thing, is like, if they can keep Denver in rotation and their shot quality goes up to where the tough shots are more of like counters and coverage beaters, whereas the majority of their shots are coming like what you saw in that third quarter run where it's like, you know, get a stop, push in transition, wide open three for somebody. Get a, you know, bring Jokic up to the ball, get him in a rotation. There's another wide open corner three for Aaron Gordon, another wide open corner three for, you know, Grayson Allen or whoever it is. Like when they're getting those high quality shots, they can kind of mitigate that gap there, right? And so that's what I noticed on tape. That really I think bodes well for Phoenix in that matchup, is they can get good shots against Denver, not super tough contested shots. They can get good shots against Denver, and they've had extended stretches of that. But we've seen Denver also defend them better, even in the context of this season, namely in the fourth quarter of their matchup the last time Phoenix won in overtime, right? And so this is where I'd look at Denver's adjustments. Running the deeper drop, meaning don't bring Jokic up to the level. Yeah, you're going to have a sacrifice there. Kevin Durant's going to be more comfortable. Devin Booker's going to be more comfortable. Those guys are going to get some more of those easier pull-up jump shots that they can get in those coverages, right? But in that case, you're helping yourself on the defensive glass by staying, not just keeping Jokic closer to the rim, but also just kind of having everybody more matched up. And two, you keep the ball from popping around and getting really easy catch-and-shoot looks, right? Which I think are going to be more dangerous to Denver than tough shot-making from Phoenix. I think Phoenix can beat Denver a couple of times on tough shot making. I don't think they can beat them 4 times out of 7 with tough shot making, right? Less help, like we talked about earlier with Reggie Jackson. And again, staying out of rotation to keep clean rebounding matchups and making Phoenix beat you with tough shot making. So again, I think there are adjustments that can be made there. But if Denver gets into rotation constantly against Phoenix, I think there's a chance that they could get outshot in the series. We are welcoming a new show to iHeart and the DraftKings YouTube channel. It is called Point Game with John Wall and CJ Toledano. It is an insider's look at the NBA and the culture surrounding the league. Every week, the 5-time All-Star and number one pick in the 2010 NBA Draft, John Wall will give his unique perspective on the hottest topics in the league and tell the best behind-the-scenes stories from his time in the NBA. CJ will bring his A-list comedian buddies to keep it light and fire off some hoops takes. Plus, John will be inviting current and former NBA players, friends, and teammates to join the show as well to give their unfiltered accounts of what really goes on in the league from a player's perspective. So check out Point Game with John Wall and CJ Toledano on the iHeartRadio app, the DraftKings YouTube channel, or wherever you listen to your podcasts.
Allstate wants to remind fans that mayhem is everywhere. Like at your pregame barbecue. While you prep your meats, that grease trap you forgot to empty is prepping to smoke your porch, garage, and the car inside. And without the right home and auto insurance coverage, the cost to repair this could eat up your savings. So bundle home and auto with Allstate to save and get protected from mayhem like this. Bundled savings vary and are not available in every state. Coverage is subject to policy terms and conditions.
Angie's List is now Angie, the nation's largest home services marketplace. They're here to help homeowners get all their jobs done well. Angie has helped over 150 million homeowners care for their homes. Whatever your home project, big or small, indoor or outdoor, come to Angie to connect with and hire skilled professionals to get the job done well. Something I've always been a big believer in. When you try to take projects on yourself, you usually don't know what you're doing. You usually end up making mistakes, and it can be a big headache. And so not only can a professional from Angie get the job done more efficiently, but they also are people that you can support within your community as local businesses. With over 200,000 pros in their network, Angie makes it easy to research, compare, and hire pros to ensure a job is done well. With 29 years of experience, combined with new digital tools to simplify the process, Angie makes completing home projects easy. Consider Angie your hub for all your home improvement needs. They can help you find the best price for your project by comparing quotes from multiple pros in just a few taps, or book services at an upfront price based on local data. Angie has cost guides that will tell you what others have paid for similar projects both nationally and in your area, and the app is free and easy to use. Get started at Angie.com. That's A-N-G-I.com, or download the app today. Secondly, this was another major takeaway that I had on the Phoenix side. Kevin Durant looks substantially more comfortable working against Aaron Gordon as a primary defender in this year than I noticed in the playoffs last year. Now, there's reasons for that. Like I said, Phoenix has substantially more offensive talent now, but a lot of it also has to do with just more variety offensively. There was a lot of pick and roll with Kevin Durant last year against Aaron Gordon. A lot of pick and roll, a lot of ISO. Kevin Durant's attacking so much more in closeout situations now. And like, he can actually kind of do some damage to Aaron Gordon in space. He's a little quicker than him, which I think is interesting. And so I think you've seen probably Kevin Durant's two best games against Aaron Gordon in the last couple of years in this season. I don't remember a specific. He had some big box score games. I think he had 39 in game 3 or game 4 of the Denver series last year, but he wasn't particularly efficient. This kind of like efficient shot making and scoring from Kevin Durant against Aaron Gordon is kind of a different thing than we saw last year. And I think that that's super encouraging. And then lastly, the third one, Thaddeus Young looks like a legitimate playoff weapon. It's 6 points and 9 rebounds in 18 minutes. The Suns were plus 15 in those minutes. So far, the Thad Young, Kevin Durant front court with no center, which they went to for a little bit in that, if I remember correctly, it was in the early fourth quarter stretch. But with those two guys on the floor with no center and just under 50 possessions, plus 16 net rating. So outscoring teams by 16 points per 100 possessions. Great on both ends of the floor. That group is grabbing 37% of available offensive rebounds. Thad Young himself had 4 offensive rebounds in that game against Denver. He brings an entirely different look than some of these other role players that Phoenix has rolled out there over the course of the year. The big one to me is the contested rebounding. And so there's a specific play that I wanted to kind of talk to you guys about to kind of demonstrate the advantage of having a guy that can help in these particular situations. So it's a fourth quarter possession. It's early fourth. I want to say Denver's up or Phoenix is up either 9 or 11 at this point. It's right around that double figures point. Aaron Gordon gets Eric Gordon on a switch in the post. Posting up on the left block. And Aaron Gordon kind of meanders his way into the lane, and he pulls Bol Bol on a baseline double team. So Bol Bol comes over on the baseline side. Aaron Gordon identifies Christian Brown as the cutter there, hits Christian Brown. Christian Brown ends up dribbling out to the three-point line, taking a three. Not obviously a great shot out of a double team, but a shot. However, there's still an advantage there. Aaron Gordon still has Eric Gordon on him underneath the basket. How many times this season have we seen Eric Gordon do damage on the offensive glass with a smaller defender there because double teams or mismatches or whatever, or switches, cross matches, whatever it is, has pulled the bigger defenders away from the basket and left Aaron Gordon down there by himself? How many times have we seen that? That's a huge staple of Denver's offense. But here's the thing. Thad Young comes flying in, and even though Aaron Gordon goes way over the top of Eric Gordon and he's there to grab the ball, Thad Young just comes in and snatches it out of his hand. That's a huge advantage. To put it simply, Thad Young raises the physical profile of those lineups and gives them an option to go to that brings more physicality to the table. So now, kind of to put a bow on all that, again, weird game, too many important missing pieces to really view that as like an accurate description of what those matchups will look like. However, I do think Phoenix does present some legitimate issues for Denver. Their aggregate offensive talent around the board can really spread Denver out in a way that makes it tougher for them. And they have the star talent to get Denver into rotation consistently. And again, Denver, I've seen Denver be really good in rotation. I've seen Denver run different coverages where they keep Jokic closer, more conservative coverages where they stay out of rotation. Again, I would pick Denver to win a 7-game series against Phoenix. But I think Phoenix is demonstrating the little things that they can do that put Denver into some predicaments that give them some advantages. And I think it's worth keeping an eye on as we get into that postseason. All right. Second biggest takeaway from my time away on vacation. Going to be a little bit more surface level the rest of the way because, like I said, I was really just trying to take the time to enjoy hanging out with my wife and with her family for a little bit. Number two, the Dallas Mavericks are showing signs of real championship contention. They had a little bit of an easy stretch in their schedule last week. They had 3 wins against the Spurs and the Jazz. But then they roll up into Sacramento for a super important game for seeding. And it's close for a little over 2 quarters, and then they just beat the living shit out of them. Now Dallas is in commanding position for the 6th seed, and they're in striking distance of the 5 seed. Biggest positive sign, though. We remember They went on that East Coast road trip and just got sliced and diced by everybody. They defended before the trip, then they went on the trip and they could not guard a soul, right? Then they come home and they had a couple of other bad losses, right? I think the Pacers ended up getting them at home, similar type of game. But then they go up, they snap back into form against the Heat, have a good defensive night. In their 10 games since the Miami Heat game, 106.5 defensive rating. That's the second best mark in the league over that span. And 12th in defensive rebounding, which is one of their better stretches of defensive rebounding that we've seen over the course of the season. We've talked about this with a bunch of different teams around the league this year, and there's a bunch of teams that kind of fit into this mold, right? Sacramento fits into this mold. Dallas fits into this mold. The Lakers kind of fit into this mold. Milwaukee kind of fits into this mold. These are teams that, like, they're Jekyll and Hyde on the details, right? If you catch the Mavericks on the right night, you're like, man, these guys have some real athletes on the perimeter. They got some athletes under the rim. Their stars are trying hard and doing their job. Like, they can defend. Same thing goes for Milwaukee. Catch them on the right night when Dame and Malik Beasley are really turning it up at the point of attack. And in general, they're just engaged defensively. They look really good defensively. Lakers, same sort of thing, right? Kings, gosh, the Kings have had some of the most impressive two-way performances I've seen in the league this year. But again, it's about consistency and habits. And I'm seeing now a 10-game stretch, a significant chunk of the season, where the Mavs are really defending and really rebounding. And this has been an extended stretch now, dating back to before the Eastern Conference road trip. This has been a thing where more often than not, Dallas has been bringing those defensive details to the equation. And again, like, everything about, we know what Luka and Kyrie can do as shot creators. We saw what they did to Sacramento in that third quarter run. But that's only one part of this. That physical imposition on the game is a massive element there. It is a prerequisite. You have to do it. Denver was a mediocre defense a lot of the year last year. What were they when they got into the postseason? They were an elite defense. You don't win out executing teams on one end of the floor. You win out executing teams on two ends of the floor, right? And so I think that this is just, I always look at habits as the big, like the thing that you lean on when the shit hits the fan, right? And the best way to establish habits is over an extended span of regular season basketball, putting in that attention to detail. And Dallas is doing that. That's a major box for me to check on the path to championship contention. Really, really impressive showing from Dallas as of late. Number three, this is one that's going to really piss people off, but hey, we're just going to have some fun with it. We are welcoming a new show to iHeart and the DraftKings YouTube channel. It is called Point Game with John Wall and CJ Toledano. It is an insider's look at the NBA and the culture surrounding the league. Every week, the five-time All-Star and number one pick in the 2010 NBA Draft, John Wall will give his unique perspective on the hottest topics in the league and tell the best behind-the-scenes stories from his time in the NBA. CJ will bring his A-list comedian buddies to keep it light and fire off some hoops takes. Plus, John will be inviting current and former NBA players, friends, and teammates to join the show as well to give their unfiltered accounts of what really goes on in the league from a player's perspective. So check out Point Game with John Wall and CJ Toledano on the iHeartRadio app, the DraftKings YouTube channel, or wherever you listen to your podcasts.
Allstate wants to remind fans that mayhem is everywhere, like at your pregame barbecue. While you prep your meats, that grease trap you forgot to empty is prepping to smoke your porch, garage, and the car inside. And without the right home and auto insurance coverage, the cost to repair this could eat up your savings. So bundle home and auto with Allstate to save and get protected from mayhem like this. Bundled savings vary and are not available in every state. Coverage is subject to policy terms and conditions.
Angie's List is now Angie, the nation's largest home services marketplace. They're here to help homeowners get all their jobs done well. Angie has helped over 150 million homeowners care for their homes. Whatever your home project, big or small, indoor or outdoor, come to Angie to connect with and hire skilled professionals to get the job done well. It's something that I've always been a big believer in. When you try to take on a project that you don't know how to do, it ends up just being a bigger headache as you try to learn, and then you end up making mistakes, and it ends up just not being worth it. Not only can a professional get the job done more efficiently, but you're also supporting local businesses in your area. With over 200,000 pros in their network, Angie makes it easy to research, compare, and hire pros to ensure a job job is done well. With 29 years of experience, combined with new digital tools to simplify the process, Angie makes completing home projects easy. Angie has cost guides to tell you what others have paid for similar projects both nationally and in your area. The app is free and easy to use. We all know the difficulties that can come with home projects. Angie makes tackling your project as simple as possible from start to finish. Turn to Angie with confidence, even for major renovations or emergency repairs. Are you renting? Even renters can come to Angie for moving, installations, and cleaning. Get started at Angie.com. That's A-N-G-I.com, or download the app today. The Bucks and Lakers are two very similar teams playing in two very different conferences. So obviously, both teams are playing well right now. The Bucks went out west and got smashed by everybody, but they came home and they got a couple of impressive wins. They beat the Thunder and the Suns in blowout fashion at home. Lakers currently on a 5-game winning streak. A huge win in Milwaukee without LeBron James, and then a big one without Anthony Davis in Memphis. Now they're making a real run at that 8 seed. Now, before anybody says anything, I know what everyone's going to say. Jason, that's insane. The Bucks are a 2 seed. The Lakers are fighting for the play-in. How could you possibly consider them to be similar? Well, I'm going to go with the similarities first, then we'll go into the differences. First of all, both teams have two superstars. Both teams kind of considered, both of those stars considered, you know, comfortably top 15. Obviously, both Dame and LeBron are down a level from where their original reputation was, but they're both considered kind of top 15. And then obviously, Giannis is better than all of those guys, but Anthony Davis and Giannis are both considered in like that superstar tier, right? So you both got two superstar-led teams, right? You both have massive front lines, Giannis and Brooke Lopez, LeBron James and Anthony Davis. Both teams are weak at the point of attack defensively. Now, the Lakers have a good option coming back in Jared Vanderbilt, but with Jared Vanderbilt out of the equation, they kind of look a lot like Milwaukee at the point of attack, right? And now Milwaukee has a similar issue with the Patrick Beverley injury. The Bucks have 25 wins against 500 or better teams. The Lakers have 24 wins against 500 or better teams. Both teams are elite against the great teams and mediocre against the mediocre teams. For example, both the Bucks and the Lakers are top 5 in net rating against teams in the top 10 in point differential, according to Cleaning the Glass. The Lakers have 17 such wins against teams in the top 10 in point differential, which is the most in the league. For comparison, the Celtics have only 13 such wins. To give you an idea, the Lakers have played the toughest schedule in the NBA this year, almost 52% opponent winning percentage. Both teams are bottom 12 in net rating against teams in the middle 10 of point differential. So Lakers fans, if it felt like to you that the Lakers show up for big games and then all the middle of the pack teams, they're kind of bad or mediocre, same exact thing Bucks fans have been dealing with. They've been really good against the top of the league, pretty mediocre against the middle of the team, middle of the league. Both teams are awesome in the clutch. Both the Lakers and Bucks are top 5 in clutch win percentage and total clutch wins. So a ton of similarities between the Bucks and the Lakers. So Jason, why are the Bucks the 2 seed and the Lakers the 9 seed? Because the Eastern Conference is absolutely horrifically bad at the bottom. The West has completely and utterly cleaned house against the East in cross-conference matchups this year. The scheduling is, just to give you an idea, because you play the bottom teams in your, you play 52 of your 82 games against your own conference. So it makes a substantial difference in the strength of schedule, right? To give you an idea, 3 of the 4 worst records in the league are in the Eastern Conference, and the Bucks are 10-0 in those games. Charlotte, Detroit, Washington. Bucks are 10-0. The Lakers don't get to play Charlotte, Detroit, and Washington that often. They just don't. If I'm not mistaken, I think the Bucks have 2 more matchups with Washington just this year. If they're one of those teams, I can't remember who it is, but they have a couple more matchups just this year against those teams. The Lakers have played the toughest schedule in the league this year. The Bucks have played the 18th toughest schedule in the league this year. To put it more simply, the Bucks have 46 wins. The Lakers have 41 wins. But the Bucks have played an additional 5 games against below 500 opponents. That's the difference. That's the difference between these two teams. Think about that. Think about the way the Lakers are perceived. I still, every single day, get countless YouTube comments about how the Lakers are so bad and no team in NBA history would get talked about this much as a 9 seed. They literally have the most wins against top 10 teams in the league. They have 17 of them. They have one fewer win against 500 or better teams than the Bucks. They have countless massive national TV wins against really high-level teams. They've played the toughest schedule in the league. They just have a really difficult conference, and they went 3-10 for a brief stretch after the in-season tournament when Darvin Ham literally benched three of their five highest paid players for no fucking reason. Okay. That's why the Lakers are perceived the way they're perceived. Now, do I think the Lakers are a top tier championship contender? No, but I don't think the Bucks are either. I think they're more or less the same. They're in that tier below the teams at the top of the league. Both of them have real championship potential, but they've got to improve in certain areas. Both need to get healthy too. The Bucks and the Lakers, it's so funny to me because that is a textbook example of the weakness in the Eastern Conference at the bottom and how that just completely turns everybody into standings watchers and they miss what's happening right in front of them. The Lakers are every bit as good at basketball as the Milwaukee Bucks. The difference is one team ratcheted up a bunch of easy wins against bad teams at the bottom, and so they look substantially better in the standings. On the Lakers front, before we move on, I think like this latest stretch had, honestly, it was fun watching as a fan on vacation. Obviously, I was actually talking with my wife about this. Like, so much of what I do has, you know, the work element to it, right? Even last year, just as someone rooting for the Lakers, it was kind of a pain in the ass having to deal, like, navigate that while also trying to cover them fairly in the show, right? And obviously I've never tried to hide from my biases there. I'm just straight to tell you guys, I'm a Lakers fan. Obviously I have a rooting interest there, but at the same time, I'm not like the kind of like blind follower in the sense that all you Lakers fans know I've been talking endless shit about the Lakers this year because they're a team that frustrates me on so many different levels. But one of the things that's really stood out to me and just getting to watch as a fan was so fun. Cause on this trip, like I literally was just kicking back, you know, having a couple drinks with my wife, watching the game. It just was more enjoyable. it was enjoyable in a different way to just do it as a fan. And that Bucks game was so much fun. Like, just impressive resilience. Some of the craziest plays I've ever seen. Like Spencer Dinwiddie, when he couldn't buy a bucket all game, just like pulling up in transition from the three-point line and sticking that above the break three. That was insane. Austin Reeves, that might have been his very best game as a professional basketball player. That was insane. The big one to me, though, that's really standing out to me about this Lakers team is they're like legitimately just super hard to guard, which I never would have thought I would say this at the beginning of this season, because this has been a mediocre offensive team the entire time I've known them. And I mean the LeBron AD era. They were mediocre offensively in 2019. They were okay to good in the 2020 season, but they weren't particularly good in the half court. They were pretty bad in 2021. They were pretty bad in 2022. They were pretty bad in 2023, and they've been pretty bad most of this year. To start this year, right? That's what I've known watching the LeBron AD Lakers since basically January, the beginning of the year. They've been an awesome offense. They're one of the best 3-point shooting teams in the league. They have tons of different kinds of shot creation. It's like Austin Reeves can get hot on any given night. D'Angelo Russell can get hot on any given night. Rui Hachimura in the starting lineup has presented a bunch of issues for teams where it's like, okay, I need a big guy to guard Anthony Davis. Okay, here he is. I need a big guy who's pretty fast to guard LeBron James. Okay, cool. I need point of attack defenders to deal with Austin Reeves and D'Angelo Russell and ball screens. Okay, cool. Who's guarding Rui? He's getting guarded by the weakest defender every single game, and he's cooking teams. And not only on the ball, too, like because he can beat guys in ISO and post-up situations on the ball, but he also can do it just spotting up. Like he's been a really good spot-up player this year. Not just shooting threes, but attacking closeouts. He's been a great transition athlete as well. Obviously, it's not the ideal configuration, and when Jared Vanderbilt comes back, I think he should start. And then I would just play Rui similar minutes coming off the bench. But, like, that presents a whole other set of issues for teams. Everyone's getting better. D'Angelo Russell is a substantially better player now than he was to start the season. Austin Reeves is a substantially better player now than he was to start the season. He's looking like, even though he's not quite to the level of production he was at in the postseason last year, he is doing at a higher level this year in a more difficult role alongside a bunch of other pieces. This is not brute force, spread the floor, Austin plays pick and roll. He's doing this in the flow of the offense with everybody. Anthony Davis passing out of the post better than ever before. LeBron James having a better post, a better offensive season by a mile than he did last year. This is a good offense. This is a really good offense. And again, I don't think they have any chance to win the title unless they can kind of round some things out defensively. Austin Reeves has been really good at the point of attack, even though he's been given some really tough assignments that he really has no business taking care of, but he's done a good job. I thought he did an awesome job on Dame the other night. But like when you slot Jared Vanderbilt in there and put everybody back down in the appropriate defensive roles, if they can get their defense to even in the same stratosphere as their offense, if they can get up in that 10 to 15 range as a defense when they get healthy, that's where their puncher's chance is. Again, I know I'm a fan. I know that it's foolishness to consider the Lakers on the same tier as the teams at the top of the league, and I don't. But I do think they're every bit as good as everybody that's below them, below that Boston-Denver tier. And I think they've shown it in a lot of real ways that they're not getting credit for this year. A really tough Western Conference in a couple of weeks where they were dog shit has completely changed the perception around about the Lakers around the league. And I think that they're worth at least paying attention to here down the stretch. All right, lastly, before we get out of here today, my fourth biggest takeaway. The Warriors looked completely dead to rights, and then they saved their season. You know, I pulled aside this part of their schedule as a vulnerability for the Warriors just simply because of the type of personnel they were going against. Teams that have really good, physical, strong perimeter defenders that can make Steph work hard can expose the issues that the Warriors have in down the roster shot creation. And I had a feeling that this stretch would cause them some issues, and it did. But the last two games are not easy matchups on that front either. Miami has athletes on the perimeter that they can throw at Steph. The Orlando Magic have arguably the best young guard defender in the league in Jalen Suggs. And so these were games that I kind of had my eye on as where it could have gone really south. And then to make matters worse, Houston can't lose. You know, so like it was looking like a danger zone. And this is where, you know, I have such an appreciation for guys like Steph Curry, and both Steph and LeBron have had stretches like this in the last couple of years. And it's helped, you know, kind of reinforce the way that I feel about them as players, because these are not easy teams to believe in. Looking back to last year's Lakers, when that team looked dead to rights, and even this year. And then this year's Warriors, obviously. These are not teams where it's like, you're not like, when Jokic is sitting at home right now, he knows, like, if I hit the Jets and I play to my capability, we're going to get the trophy. Like, that's the confidence that Jokic has in his group, right? And I don't think LeBron or Steph have any delusions of grandeur. I don't think they're sitting around in their houses going, like, we got ourselves a real title threat here. I think they think, like, we can win. But man, like, we got some strengths and we got some weaknesses, right? And what's cool about that is, like, both of them have responded to that by trying to win anyway. It would have been so easy after that last sequence to just let go of the rope. And no, they didn't. Even just in that Orlando Magic game, Draymond Green gets ejected with four minutes into the game. Completely absurd, completely unacceptable. At some point, Draymond Green has to understand that his team needs him on the floor. And there is absolutely no excuse to continually be getting yourself kicked out of these games. And I would imagine Draymond would agree. Completely unacceptable. I totally understood why Steph was so upset. But like, even then, it would have been so easy to just be like, not our night. Really good Orlando Magic team on the road. Tough matchup for us. Not our night. But no, that's not what happened. And like, it was a classic kind of battle too, because Steph, What did he go? 6 for 18. Obviously made a three at the end of the game that kind of tied that together. It was even worse before then. And they got some huge contributions out of Andrew Wiggins. I thought that was probably his best game since the 2022 playoff run. Really got going in the with the ball in his hands there in that fourth quarter. Started with a kickout three. Steph got blitzed on the right side of the floor, and Andrew Wiggins stuck that above the break three on the left side. But after that, it was all Wiggins on the ball. Like running those inverted ball screen actions where, like, again, so Steph sets the ball screen. Nobody who's guarding Steph wants to hedge or help or anything, because his job is guard Steph at all costs, right? And so it essentially operates as a really, really great screening action, because as long as Steph sets a good screen on the on-ball defender, there's nobody that's going to be waiting on the other side of that screen. As a matter of fact, Orlando tried switching it late, and then Wiggins ended up just bullying his way to the basket out of the post. It was a really, really impressive effort from Wiggins. And honestly, like, that's going to be the big kind of like swing factor for whether or not Golden State can make a real meaningful playoff run versus something that is less impressive. It's going to be that legitimate secondary offensive initiator. Maybe it's Wiggins, maybe it's Kuminga, maybe it's Chris Paul, maybe it's Clay, but like, someone needs to become consistent on that front. Because what ends up happening is, if you have a night like that and Kuminga's a little iffy and Wiggins is a little iffy and Clay's a little iffy, the Warriors just lose. They just lose because they don't have that consistency in that group. And so I thought that was a really encouraging sign. But again, I thought when you saw the emotion from Steph, from when Draymond got suspended or ejected to when he hit the big shot at the end of the game, you can tell we might, as fans, analysts, whatever, be like, this Warriors team doesn't really have a great chance. And that, for the record, that's the truth. But Steph isn't accepting that as an answer. And again, like, a lot of times we look at the mountaintop moments as the defining characteristics of these guys. We look at Steph hoisting the trophy, KD hoisting the trophy, LeBron hoisting the trophy, and we're like, these are the moments that define them as their best. And I tend to disagree. I think those are an important part of it, but all of these different moments demonstrate a player's greatness throughout the entire process from start to finish, including like the years where your team doesn't really have it. What are you showing in those situations? You know, this is actually the biggest reason why I've said Steph is the best leader of this particular era. I don't think Steph rides the highs and lows as much as other leaders do. He does a good job of keeping an even keel and helping trying to bring limited teams up and helping to make sure that really good teams don't get overconfident. And again, like, I think that this has been one of my favorite seasons rooting for him, because a lot of shit has hit the fan in so many different ways. And the competition from Steph has just shined through as he's tried to make it work. I had a radio hit in San Francisco, I want to say it was last Wednesday, and there was a fan on the show that just simply asked, like, hey, Jason, give me some, you know, kind of silver lining, some sort of like positive thing to hang on to while all of this is crashing down. And I said kind of what I said at the top, which is this particular stretch of their schedule is really tough and they just need to survive it. And honestly, like, getting those wins over the Heat and Magic, that's them surviving it. Now, 5 of their last 10 games are against teams that are below 500. They have head-to-head matchups against the Lakers and Rockets to either secure position or to fight for more position. And these guys believe, from the coaching staff to the stars down the roster, they believe. And so, like, again, it's not, I'm not going to sit here and lie to you guys. I don't think that the Warriors have legitimate championship potential, but I think that they're capable of having a fun playoff run. And I think we'd be foolish to count them out simply because of the fact that proven winners at the top are not going to let go of the rope. And as long as they hang on to that rope and they get meaningful contributions from other players down the roster, they have the potential to make some noise. All right, guys, that is all I have for today. Like I said, we're going to end up taking the rest of the weekend off to enjoy the NCAA tournament. We'll be back on Monday with some instant reaction content as well as a power rankings video. Again, we're also going to be stepping up our film breakdowns at that point as well. I appreciate you guys. I will see you on Monday.
Allstate wants to remind fans that mayhem is everywhere, like at your pregame barbecue. While you prep your meats, that grease trap you forgot to empty is prepping to smoke your porch, garage, and the car inside. And without the right home and auto insurance coverage, the cost to repair this could eat up your savings. So bundle home and auto with Allstate to save and get protected from mayhem like this. Bundled savings vary and are not available in every state. Coverage is subject to policy terms and conditions.
Hey guys, you know what this playground could use? A wine country, huh?
A redwood forest would be cool.
Ski slopes!
Wait!
Did we just invent California?
Discover why California is the ultimate playground at visitcalifornia.com.
Good sleep should come naturally, and with the new Natural Hybrid mattress, it can. A collaboration between Lisa and West Elm, the Natural Hybrid is expertly crafted from natural latex, natural wool, and certified safe foams to elevate your sleep sanctuary and support a greener tomorrow. Plus, every purchase helps fuel Lisa's work with shelters and those in need. Don't put off a good night's sleep any longer. Get a Lisa mattress today for a sound sleep tonight. Visit Lisa.com/iHeart. That's LEESA.com/iHeart.